Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of Adult Child of Dysfunction. Today, our special guest is Jackie Bailey. She is the founder and executive director of the Speak Feed Lead Project, which has empowered hundreds of children, teens, and adults with confident, courageous voices shared on global stages, competitions, podcasts, and books. She's a 2015 semifinalist in the World Championship of Public Speaking, a TEDx speaker, a best-selling author of six books on topics ranging from leadership, healing, communication, and parenting, and the co-host of the Life Mastery Radio with Todd and Jackie. Jackie Bailey is known as the International Conversation Coach. Welcome, Jackie. So excited to have you here.
Thank you, Tammy. I'm excited to be here. This is fun. Talking about dysfunction, that's my life story.
I know everybody always goes, "Oh, that's an interesting podcast, Adult Child of Dysfunction." And I'm like, they're like, "Well, who listens to it?" And I'm like, who doesn't it apply to, really? I
Right.
mean, really. So tell us a little bit about how you got started doing what you do, because it sounds like you do amazing stuff.
Well, thank you. And it is amazing. I'm so grateful for what I can do. And the only reason I do what I do is because of my dysfunctional childhood. I grew up in a home that sexual abuse was perpetrated on me by an older brother and by a family friend. And there were other instances throughout my life, but those were the chronic conditions that started probably about the age of 8 and didn't stop until I was in my teen years. And I was told not to tell, and I was taught to lie. And when you are very young, and that is a command that you're given, you tend to obey it. At least I did, because I wasn't sure what I might accidentally tell. I stayed pretty silent, and I didn't initiate conversations or even feel comfortable in social situations because I wasn't sure if I might say something that I shouldn't. And it changed who I was. It changed who I may have been. Because I was really repressed and I didn't have anybody to really tell. It was a dysfunctional household as well, divorces and marital issues all around. And I had a brother that was an older brother that was addicted to drugs. And it was just, there was a lot of dynamics in the family that did not lead to being conducive to breaking that silence. And so what I do today is I help kids and adults, but I focus a lot on the kids. I help them to find or discover their unique experiences that can then be turned into stories and their signature talk, and then I give them stages to give that talk on. And that's really exciting.
Absolutely amazing, because I know as a kid, I remember, I mean, and that's the golden rule is you don't talk, you don't tell, you don't trust, you don't do anything. And I mean, I can only imagine, because just, I mean, I don't know if your parents knew what was going on, but who do you tell? I mean, at that point, it's just fear. So, God bless you. So tell us the steps, or when did you realize, like, okay, this has got to change? I mean, was it in your 30s, your 40s, or 20s? I don't know how old you are. You only look young, so.
I'm 60.
Oh, you don't look 60.
Thank you. It was when I was about 15 that I started to stop it myself.
Okay.
And I just basically, you always happen during the middle of the night. And I was awakened and I got to the point where I would just say, no, get out, you know? And
Right.
so I started to feel that empowerment in myself a little bit then, but I stayed silent about it. It wasn't until I was actually married and I had two kids of my own when that older brother of mine, who was the most chronic abuser in my life, he got married. And they had a baby girl. And I was the only one who knew the danger she was in. And so I went into this emotional crisis because I had a lot to lose by breaking that silence. Nobody knew. So when I told my husband, what was he going to think? You know, was he going to see me as ugly as I felt like I was? And was he not going to want to be married to me anymore? What if people didn't believe me and they tried to take my kids away from me? I knew that I was going to bring shame on myself and my family. I mean, it was just, you know, I could not see any good except that this niece of mine would be protected.
Well, and that in itself is all the good in the world. I mean, you're good.
It is,
You know,
but it
it's
was still a hard decision, surprisingly
yes.
so.
Oh, I can only imagine.
And I even considered suicide because I thought, well, maybe just crawling under a rock would be the easiest way out of this, and I wouldn't have to, bring anything out. But in doing that, I realized then she would not be safe, nor would my own children be safe. So I'm
Exactly.
still here.
Exactly. Yes, you survived, and whew, I mean, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. As a matter of fact, I have somebody coming on that literally does nothing more than coach and counsel for sibling relationships, whether they were consensual or non-consensual. And I have her coming on because I have a client that has some questions about her past, and I can't even. I'm just like, wow. I'm building questions to ask her because I can't even imagine, dealing with that day in and day out. And part of that is, of course, with any of the dysfunction and the silence and all of this stuff is, like you said, and you've already mentioned the word twice, is the shame and the guilt and the so obviously your husband took it well. Are you still married?
We are still married, and yes, he
Amen.
was supportive of it. There was a lot of anger on his part because he knew my brother, and they had somewhat of a good relationship until that point. So, but he believed me, and that was important. But I went through this period. It helped relieve him a little bit because I mentioned I was in this emotional crisis for months and months and months, and I was in this state of just anger because everything was building, and anger was just the emotion that just seemed to always surface. And he thought that I had just didn't want to be married to him anymore. And so when I revealed that to him, at least he felt this relief of, okay, it's not me. It's there is a reason for this. And so I started to go into therapy and get some help. And then after a while of that, then I started breaking the silence to the rest of the family, starting with those who I thought were the low-hanging fruit, those that would most likely believe me first, and did it slowly that way.
Believe you and the ones that most needed to hear the information for their own protection
Exactly.
and their children's protection and their children's friends and every you just never know. You just never
Yeah,
know.
exactly. Yep.
So,
Yeah.
moving past, I don't want to move past that because that's a big portion of what we're talking about, but I love that you said, I mean, now you work with children. So what were the steps? I mean, besides just traditional talk therapy, you've already mentioned that. What else did you go through to kind of get to that other side?
Well, even in the midst of the abusive years, I always had this little voice in my head that was telling me, if you live through this, you're going to be strong. I didn't know what really that meant, but on the first day of therapy, my therapist asked me a question that was so unexpected. After I basically told her, gave her my history of why I was here, why I felt I needed help from her, she said, "Do you think you can forgive?" I almost laughed because, like, did you just hear what I said? Why are you asking me that when you just heard what I said? And it literally, I say this in some of my speeches, it felt like she was asking me to, like, pick up this huge garbage truck with my bare hands and throw it across the road. I mean, that's how impossible it seemed in that moment to forgive. But then she said, "You don't have to do it today. You don't have to do it next month. You don't have to do it before you die. But if you're not working toward the possibility of someday being able to forgive, then you're not going to be able to fully heal from this." And so she planted a seed in me. And it was in that moment or shortly thereafter when I realized that self-talk of, if you live through this, you're going to be strong. I realized the strength was going to be coming from if I was able to forgive. That
Very
was where that
interesting.
strength is coming from, right? And so it took me years. It was probably a decade or more, where I just started to slowly figure out who I was. I was, breaking the silence, and I had made sure that my niece was safe, and that was covered. The whole family knew about it at this point. And I was like, I don't know, a decade or more later, when I was feeling good, and my husband asked me one day, he said, "Do you feel like you've been able to forgive your brother?" And I really hadn't wasn't something that I was focusing on. But when he asked me that question, I thought about it for a moment, and I didn't really have animosity. I didn't have anger anymore. I didn't wish him ill.
Right.
I hadn't seen him for years, but I said, you know what? I think I have. I think I have, because it's not painful. It's not anger. I'm okay with it. And so then the next question he asked me then was, well, does he know that? And I realized, oh, maybe there is another step here. Maybe it's not just enough for me to have come to this conclusion, but maybe he does need to know that, because his life was not good. You know, he'd been in and out of marriages, he'd been out of jobs, he'd been in and out of jail for continuous crimes. And so I flew home and met him face to face and just said, you know, I forgive you.
Wow.
And he just sobbed, and I realized that I was giving him permission to have a different life than the one he had. And I
Well,
was
you
the
were
only.
giving him permission to forgive himself, to
Exactly.
give
Yeah.
himself grace.
Absolutely. And I was the only one who could do that. And so, interestingly enough, I discovered that at some point during that decade when I was working through all this stuff that I didn't really know that I was working through, at some point I had become not really the abuser, but I'd become the one with the power,
Oh,
and he
yeah.
was the one without the power, where it had always been the other way all through my childhood. But now I was the one that actually held the power over him.
Right.
And so if I had not given him permission, if I'd not forgiven him, I would have been in my own mind, wrong.
Just as bad. Yes,
Exactly.
on a different level, not
A
just as
different
bad, but I'm
level.
sick.
Absolutely. And so his life changed. I mean, his life completely changed. And you know, he had promised me years before that he would never hurt his own daughter. And I assumed the family was taking care of her, and I didn't really know. But the next wonderful moment of mercy was, let's say, about 15 years, 20 years after that occasion, after my brother had changed his life and made it better. In a moment of weakness, he made a big mistake. And his daughter, now my niece, was then 30 years old, and her dad was being arrested for a crime against a child that she knew. And she could not understand. And so she called me. She's like, how could my dad do something like that? And Tammy, it was such a tender moment, because at that, I knew that he had kept his promise. He hadn't hurt her. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been so surprised
Right, absolutely.
that her dad could do something like that. But the fact that she could never envision her dad doing that let me know that she had been kept safe.
Right.
And it was that moment, even though I was very saddened to know there was another victim, it was just elation to know that what I did, the sacrifice I made all those years ago to break that silence, had mattered for her.
Absolutely.
We don't often find those things. We don't learn the impact that we have on other people's lives,
No.
but it was a very tender mercy for me that I learned that. And so when I told her my story, and how the relationship I had with her dad went down, she just said, Aunt Jackie, thank you. You saved my life. You saved
Yeah.
me. And tears, you
I
know.
know, right?
And
That's what I'm
so,
getting ready.
yeah. And so that's why I got to the point now where I feel like we are all silenced in so many ways. Abuse is rampant, and a lot of times it's abuse, right? It doesn't have to be abuse, though, to feel silence. I mean, we just came through this lockdown where everybody was kept in their homes, and many times these kids are kept with abusive family members
Oh,
in their
yeah.
homes with no escape. Even just kids taken out of school and their routines and their sports and music and all that stuff, without life experience, a lot of them could not see beyond the next couple months or a year from there. They could not see that there would be something better. It
Right.
might look different, but it would be better. And I truly believe that's why a lot of our young people took their lives during that time, because they didn't know what it would look like later. And there was no one they could tell. In fact, many of the young people that I work with said, you know, I knew my parents were so stressed out. They were worried about grandma and grandpa getting sick. They were worried about us getting sick. They were worried about jobs. Could they keep their jobs? You know, what was going to happen? And so here, these young people were feeling fear. They were feeling displacement. They were feeling frustration and uncertainty, but they kept it in.
Yep.
They didn't want to add to the burden of what their parents were feeling as well.
And
So,
everybody has a breaking point. Everybody.
absolutely. So there's the silencing that happened, and parents don't mean to do it. In fact, we think that we're protecting our kids, but in reality, if those conversations aren't happening, we're silencing them in many ways. And you know, can I give you an example from my childhood of a time that
Absolutely.
my mother, I think she had good intentions, but she asked me a question in a way that kept me silenced even more. And it was, I was about 14, and so the abuse had been going on for many years under her roof, right? And she came to my room one night, sat on the edge of my bed as if we were going to have a heart-to-heart talk, which never happens. But she must have sensed there was something ill at ease with me. And she asked me a question. Jackie, are you letting someone do something to you they shouldn't be? Now, the way she asked that confirmed to me that this was my fault.
Absolutely.
I was letting this happen. And I was not about to confess that I was letting this happen because that just made me an uglier person than I already felt like I was. So she didn't mean to do that.
No.
But we often do that with our kids when they share something with us and we go, what? You know, we overreact, we go into mama drama, and we can silence our kids. And then they feel like, well, I can't, if you're going to react to that way, I can't tell you the bigger thing that I wanted to tell you. And so my message is, we just need to be careful the way we react to our kids and the way that we ask questions. Now, conversation is everything, and we need to have open conversations with our kids, but we need to be careful the way we're asking
Yes.
questions and that we're not silencing them instead of helping them to blossom and share those things with us that we need to know.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's so true. And just like you said, we were talking about this before we even got on here, and it's like the levels of dysfunction and so many different things there are. And you look at like the parents, it's hard for them sometimes to say, hey, talk to me about what's wrong, because a lot of times it's the parents.
Right.
I mean, they say one in five has an addicted parent. You know,
Yeah.
I would have never gone to my parents and been like, hey, you know, I really feel lonely and abused and neglected, and because they were doing it. So
Yeah.
it's like, how do we get the message to the masses, in your opinion, without, I mean, if the parents aren't the ones to give that message?
Right. I think I don't, well, I just gave a TEDx talk recently. And that's one way I'm trying to get it to the masses,
Okay.
to help people understand that conversation in anything, you know, we've learned how to communicate really well with our thumbs, right? We can send texts like nobody's business, but this face-to-face art of conversation is lost
Yeah.
on this generation and even my daughter's generation. My daughter's 40 now and she's got four kids, and I watch her on her phone, and it's soon as she gets on her phone to scroll or something, the kids just act up. It's
Yep.
like they're demanding her attention, right? And I could just see it. It's just like happens automatically. And so that's what's happening. We're saying, well, our kids aren't, they're not behaving well. They must have ADHD and they're all these things that they're being diagnosed with. We in reality, maybe the parents just need to pay better attention to what's happening with their kids. It's not really a behavioral issue. They're communicating something to us. And we need to stop and think, what is this behavior communicating to me? Maybe I don't need to put my kid on drugs. Maybe I just need to sit with them. Maybe we need to go on a afternoon ride together and just not make it about anything and just have some fun and build that trust so that when there is something to say to the kids, that they feel comfortable saying it. You know, suicide is a big deal, and it's
Yeah.
suicide has had the stigma to it for so long that we often don't want to talk about it because we're afraid we're going to give our kids an idea, right? We're going to
Right.
make them think about it. But the opposite is actually true, that if we don't give our kids an opportunity to talk about it, they don't have anyone to go to if they do start thinking about it.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I don't even know. I just heard just recently the last statistic, and it was like literally like 25 or 30% of all children asked had at least contemplated it by age like 13 or 14. And that's
Yeah,
scary.
it is scary. And
It's
I think
scary to
that's
think.
what's changed in life is that that has become normal, is that we all the kids are thinking about it. They don't make a plan all the time for it, but here's what statistics show too, is that many times it's just a kind of off the cuff decision. You know, where there's not really, we tend to look for signs, you know, oh, they were depressed, or you know, their behavior changed, or they stopped liking the things that they used to like. Okay, those could be signs, but sometimes there are no signs at all. And sometimes the kids are thinking about it, and a moment of opportunity comes up, and they just take it.
My children went to school with someone who his little brother, I mean, ninth grade, and he had this little girlfriend, and she was walking down the street with another boy, and he just didn't like it and went home, and that was it. It's like,
Yeah.
huh. And again, like you said, no forethought, no, we don't know. I mean, there was no note, there was no signs of depression,
Yeah.
nothing. Just, wow, that's a bad day, bam. And it's, they don't, that's stressful to think that it can happen that quickly too.
Absolutely. Well, and a lot
And
of kids are being blackmailed through the internet as well, and they don't know, they're put into such shame for that, because they don't know that these are predators and they're lying to them about having pictures of them. They're lying, saying, I'm going to turn these over to your parents, or I'm going to put these out online with your name plastered all over it. The kids don't know that it's not real. And so they fall prey to that. And it puts so many kids in a position where they can't face that they decide to take their lives too. Conversations are so important. We need to put the devices down and we need to talk to our kids. And not just about, you know, we don't, it doesn't matter if we just say, hey, tell me what's bothering you. That's not the way to do it, because they're not going to start sharing stuff with you if they don't already have this trust in you that makes them comfortable to do that. So
Exactly. Yeah, you
it's
need to
a
be
while.
talking about every day, not just when something's when
Yeah.
you
And it
think
needs to
something's up.
start when they're young. It needs to start when they're young, right now when they're 3 or 4, so that all along they know they can share those things with you.
Absolutely. So tell me about a little bit about your program. So it's Speak, Feed, Lead.
Yep.
Talk
That
about
kind of
that.
defines what we do. We bring kids as young as 10, all the way through early years of college and into adulthood. I mean, we work with adults too, but in our youth program specifically, that starts at age 10, and they come in through clubs. So we have a weekly club that's called Speak Kaboom. And in Speak Kaboom, they come on for an hour every week and they just play games. Improvisation, they create some stories, whether it's their own true stories or whether they create stories together just for fun. They tell impromptu speeches. They're often recorded so they can look back at them and keep a record of these fun stories that they've told. And it just helps them to feel more confident and open up in conversation with their peers. Everybody's supportive of each other, so it's a safe place to be silly. It's a safe place to fail if that's the case, if that's what they feel that they've done with a speech. And they're going to get some helpful feedback about how they might do it better or do it differently the next time. So they come in with through Speak-A-Boom. For some of those kids, they want to do a little bit more, and they get comfortable enough with conversation and communication that they say, hey, what if I started a YouTube channel? Or what if I did a podcast like Tammy is doing, right? And so Speak Tank Collaborative is the next level of our membership. And those are where we help kids through masterminds create programs. Some of our kids are teaching STEM programs at libraries after school to
Oh,
kids
neat.
younger than them. Some of them are doing community service projects like Eagle Scout projects or other things like that. And some of them are working individually on their podcasts. And so when we do that, that gives them opportunity to interview someone that they admire or someone who is in a career that they envision themselves being in someday, or maybe they just want to learn more about it. And I'll tell you, that's really cool when they can get somebody famous. And we've had some pretty famous people come into these kids' podcast episodes and be interviewed by these kids, and they would never get another chance to talk to that person. But most people
All
like to
right.
do podcasts. I love being on your podcast, right?
Right.
Especially when their interview is going to be a young person. That gets people, even the famous people, excited about doing that. So there's a lot of support for that. So that's our Speak Tank Collaborative membership. And then even beyond that, so we've got kids who really want to be speakers. They want to be on stages in front of virtual or live audiences. They want to do TEDx talks. They want to be given keynotes. They want to moderate panels at youth
Very
conference
cool.
functions. They want to write books. We've got 10
Yeah.
students now that are best-selling authors, and four of my students were just TEDx speakers. About 10 days ago, they gave their
I
TEDx
saw that in your notes. You said you were getting them ready.
Yeah. So that's exciting for them because now they're an expert in something,
Oh, yeah.
right? And if they shared an idea that they had, and now they're, I can't imagine when they apply for college, when these kids start to apply for college, they'll have a website that is their website, like theirname.com kind of thing. And this is going to highlight all of the speeches they've given, the TEDx talks they've done. It's going to highlight the books they're in. It's going to highlight their sports achievements, their music, whatever, academic awards, whatever it is. And so when they go to apply for college, it's going to say, here's my website. And they get to keep that forever. It's their name
That is so
forever.
cool.
Yeah, but as long as they're in our program, then we're going to cover the costs of that for them. So it's updated for them and everything. They don't even have to do anything. Just say, here's what I want differently on here, or add this, and it's done. So that's really nice for them as well. And that's called the Pro Speak and Influencer stage, is our top level membership.
That's amazing. It's funny how you just think, like I didn't even know something like your organization existed, but I have a client whose daughter is autistic, so she loves drama and acting in front of a camera and doing all that, but she doesn't like to be in front of crowds. And that's where I was like, hey, why don't you let her do an Ask Riley podcast and have kids come on and ask her questions, and then she can interact fine. She's just that big crowd of people. And so we came up with that idea, and she's been looking into it and YouTube and all that stuff. And I was like, I ought to send her your way and see if she can get some, because she's really good at it,
Absolutely. Yeah, we actually have a couple of autistic students, and they're brilliant. You know, they and they contribute so much to our groups, and so happy to have them. And then, with our adult clients and with students who really want to specifically concentrate on something like a TEDx talk, then we have one-to-one coaching available as well, so that they get just one-on-one time with me, and we work specifically on what they're trying to do to elevate themselves outside of the groups. But that's always available too. So I just am so grateful that I get to do this, because if I had had a mentor when I was in the throes of my abusive childhood, I don't know how different I would be. It's hard to say, right? I don't know if I would have opened up to my family, but at least I would have felt like there was someone who cared about me and that I was getting my voice out there somehow, because that has been the important part for me, is my voice. And I realize now that every time I tell my story, I heal a little bit more deeply and I inspire somebody else. I mean, every time I speak, somebody approaches me, at least one person approaches me and said, oh my gosh, I had a similar experience, or thank you, because now I realize I need to forgive. There's someone I need to forgive. Da, 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 da. I hear that every single time. In fact, I was speaking on one occasion to it was at a hospital, it was a cancer care clinic. And it was during their lunchtime, and I'm not even sure who was in the audience. I think it might have been doctors, nurses, medical staff, but I think there was also some patients and maybe family members of patients. This was when I was preparing to go to the World Championship of Public Speaking, and so I was practicing that speech, which was only 7 minutes in length. But as was customary, when I would go to these local venues to practice my speech, people would give me feedback afterwards and let me know, here was the powerful part that impacted me, or here's something that I got confused about. Maybe you could change your wording here, something like that. So on this occasion, I'd given my speech, and we were going around the room as was typical. And this young man who was there, he was probably early 30s. He didn't look like a doctor. He had a tank top on, and so he was covered in tattoos that I could see. Some of the tattoos went up onto his face. He had piercings. He just didn't look like a professional, as you might think. So I'm not sure how he fit in this occasion, but he bravely stood up in front of all these people, 50 or 60 people. And he said, I don't really have anything to say about your speech, but I'm an abuser. And for the first time, I understand what my victims go through.
Wow. That
Yeah.
gives me goosebumps moment.
Ah, wow. And it's like you just
Wow.
never know who you're going to impact. And I'm so grateful that he did that day. Because when I went on to the contest and I didn't make it onto the finals, I was a little bit disappointed. I felt like, hey, it was going to be my year to be the world champion, right? But a few days later, I remembered that occasion in the practice of that speech, and I remembered that what that young man did, and it made me think maybe I was not competing so that I would be the world champion. Maybe
Nope.
the only reason I was competing is so that that man would hear my message and he would change his life and subsequently the life of those whomever he was abusing, right?
Yep.
And so that is what I help my kids to understand is you don't know who you're going to impact. You're going to
No.
impact somebody, and it's probably going to be more than one person, but even if you only impact one person, that makes your life worthwhile.
Absolutely. We used to work for a company, and that was they had a mission, and it was called If Only One. And it was just, if you can just touch one, I say that all the time. But look at, I picture those movies where they always say, how many people have done this, and it'll be like a whole group of students, and nobody will stand up. And then as soon as that first one stands up, then the second one, then the third one, then the fourth one, and next thing you know, like half the room standing up. And it's just, that is why it's so powerful what you do, because it's like asking the first question in a room. Nobody wants to ask the first question, but I always start everything in with a group of kids. Hey guys, if anybody has this question, I promise you, 20 more people have it. They're just afraid to ask. So
Yeah.
you be the one. You be the one,
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I'm very grateful for what I do.
So, well, thank you for what you do, by the way. So listening for the people out there listening, and they might be having trouble trying to break into their children's minds or hearts or whatever it is, what would be some suggestions you would give them? Let's say if they don't have the best relationships, or they're not close to their kids, but they want to be.
Yeah. Great question. First of all, I would say stop talking at your kids and start talking with your kids. If you think of our kids as bank accounts and think of, are we depositing assets of self-worth into them or are we withdrawing more than we're depositing every day? And I want the parents to think for a moment of how many statements are being thrown at their kids every day from the moment they get up. Get up. You're going to be late. Get down to breakfast. Get your backpack. Get your lunch. Get out the door. You're going to miss the bus. Sit in your seat. We're going to have a test today. Hope you studied. Think about all these statements that are made to them throughout the day by all the people that are in their sphere of influence. And you wonder how many of those statements are really engaging them in conversation. Very few.
Right.
Statements do not a conversation make. Statements do not a relationship make. Only conversations can do that. So when you think about that, either you can soften your statements to your kids, but better than that is to ask them more questions. So that would be the second thing I would say is when your kids come home from school and they walk through the door, maybe they throw their backpack to the side, you're scrolling on your phone. And you say, hey, honey, how was your day? While you're looking at your phone, your kid is probably not going to say anything more than fine, it was okay, or even the grunt, right? Because they know it's just a courtesy phrase.
Right.
They know that you're really not asking, how was their day? It's just rote, it doesn't mean anything. We all do it. We all do it, right? Especially if mom or dad is scrolling on their phone, they know the kid right away. They know they're not listening. My kids tell me that. My students say, I know my mom's not listening to me. She's looking at her phone. So why would they answer a question like that? So
Right.
here's what we can do. We can ask better questions. Instead of, how was your day? Put down the dang device and then say, hey, honey, welcome home. It's great to see you. Tell me about the best part of your day today.
Right.
How did you do on your English test? I bet you blew it away. How did you do? Who did you sit with at lunch? What did you guys talk about? Ask them questions that are not typical, that are not rote, and get them talking to you. Ask them questions that will make them have to think about an answer and then give it to you. And then sometimes you still have to pull it out of them. Okay, well, why did you eat with Joe? Oh,
Right.
you like Joe? What did you guys talk about? Oh, that's an interesting subject. How did that come up? You've got to just keep probing without judgment. And that's really important too, is you can't be doing that to sneak into the lives of your kids or find out what they're doing. Although you can determine through a lot of that what motivates them. So if they're
Right.
going back to that simple example of having lunch with Joe, well, why is Joe such a good friend for you? Well, how does Joe treat you that makes you feel good about yourself? You can learn ways that kids feel good by what others are doing or how they're influencing their lives. If they get a good grade, well, does that make them happy? Is it something that they want to celebrate? Maybe that's what motivates them, is achieving something, right? Or
Right.
maybe it's just that the teacher asked them a question and they knew the answer. That was exciting because that made them look good. It made them look smart. And maybe that is what makes them motivated about who they are, is knowing the answers or feeling like, I looked good to my peers. Whatever it is,
Right.
asking those questions through conversations is the only way we can find out what motivates our kids. And once we know what motivates them, then everything else can fall into place
Yes.
because we have to discipline each child differently based on what motivates them. You can't take a phone away from one kid who doesn't really care
Right.
about, or who doesn't have any friends or a social life anyway. That's not going to matter. But
Right.
there's a different way to give them punishment if they need to, or discipline them some way that, but it's got to be based on what motivates them. That's how they'll learn. So one, stop talking at your kids and start talking with them. But then when you are talking with them, ask questions that are meaningful. Build that trust, all right, so that they feel comfortable, and don't react with judgment
Yeah.
when they do tell you what they're thinking. Ask questions that follow up. I say, listen for keywords that they say and use those keywords back to them. And it's easy for my youngest 10-year-old students when I say, look for or listen for nouns or words that describe feelings or emotions. Like if you said, well, I had lunch with my best friend, Joe. Okay, Joe's a noun, lunch is a noun, best friend, that's a description of something, a good feeling. Right? So
Yes.
you want to find out the emotion. Why is Joe your best friend? What do you look for in friends? Is Joe that kind of friend? So those are the ways that you can use words they've said. They know you're listening because you've used their words back to them, and you can continue that conversation. So listening. In fact, I just heard an interesting medical fact that when we die, when we're in the process of dying, our hearing is the last sense that goes.
Oh, that's
In other words,
interesting.
we can still hear, even though we may be in a coma, we are still hearing. And so that's how important our ears are, is that it's the last thing to go, because maybe it's the most important that we need to hear our loved ones say, I love you, or I miss you, or something like that. And so listening to our kids is the most important thing, but do it without judgment and ask them, well, how did that make you feel? How did it make you feel when Joe told you that? Or if that would happen again, would you do anything differently? What would that be? Right? So you ask those types of questions in a feeling sense without the judgment, and you'll start to notice a change in the way that your kids act, in the engagement that they have with you. And over time, they're going to be more apt to confide in you in those important things because they know that they're safe to do it in the smaller things. So
Exactly.
that's
And I'm going to reiterate that you said in time, because if you've never done with this with your children and all of a sudden they come home and you're like, oh, so who'd you sit with today? And blah, 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 blah. And you have not done this in the past, you're going to get a very quick wall put up. And why are you being so nosy?
Why are
Why do
you
you care all of a sudden? Why do you this? Why do you that? And you don't want to have to wrestle that one down either.
Exactly.
So
Exactly. And so you
baby
almost
steps.
have to listen at dinner the night before about what they're talking about or what they're
Exactly.
looking forward to. So then when they come in the door the next day, you can say, hey, how did that go today? How did that test in math go? Or how did your presentation, how do you feel you did in your presentation? What do you feel you did really well? What are some things you'd do differently if you had to do it again? And so you've got to be listening all the time and looking for opportunities to ask those kinds of questions.
Exactly. And the kids talk. I mean, now they're on their headphones. If they're the video game type, they got headphones on and they're talking the whole time. So you're
Yeah.
hearing everything that's going on. They're just not sharing it with you. So use that opportunity to kind of, I
Exactly.
mean, I would do it. I don't want to say eavesdrop because that's not the right word, but I mean, I'm in the same house and you hear what they're saying. And then it's like, oh, I gotta go. I got to finish my math project. I got to go. I got to do this. And so the next day, it's very easy to be like, just finish that math project. How'd it go?
Yeah.
Like as if you had had this conversation with them because they're
Yes.
not going to remember.
Right. And you know what? Parents have a really hard job. It is probably the hardest job on the planet, but it's also the most worthwhile job. So I don't want parents to feel shamed or feel like they're not doing it right or they're not doing it well. That's not the reason that we're having this conversation. But I want them to understand that the kids need their attention.
Yes.
No matter how young or how old, they need to know that mom and dad are involved. They may not make it appear that way, but that's really what they want. And they also want some rules. They want some boundaries. They need to know that there are rules of engagement, if you will. And if you set up rules ahead of time, then it avoids arguments later on, because arguments are the worst thing that you can have with your kids, right? But if you say, well, here's the rule that we've always had, do you think that this decision keeps within our rule or not? It's easy to ask that without being the bad guy. Say, no, you can't go to that party. You say, well, here's our rule. That's it. And let them decide. I mean, we really need to let kids make more of those decisions with our help, nudging them toward those things without being the bad guy, right?
Gosh, I remember it was like about 12 years ago, 11 years ago. My son was about 16, and I remember saying to him, "Hey, it's Friday night. Why aren't you going out?" And literally, all he said to me was, "Have you seen my room?"
Oh.
And I never, ever, ever grounded them or anything, but it was like, uh-oh, I must have said something under my breath, like, "You're living like a pig," or something like that. But he was like, "Have you seen my room?" I was like, "Okay, that worked."
Yeah. Yeah.
That was funny. Yeah, they listen. They listen. And then I'm going to, so tell us, I know we're running short on time, but tell me about your project. You said you've got a cool humanitarian project going on right now.
Yes. So we have an opportunity. I made a connection with a woman named Aika Ninka. She's in Tanzania, Mount Kilimanjaro area of Tanzania, and she runs a nonprofit there called the Nguzo Women and Youth Foundation. And they support kids through regular schools. There's like eight schools within the Kilimanjaro region there. And she supports these schools on behalf of the government. And she provides for them reproductive and hygiene health training, entrepreneurship training, leadership. They want to add in some sports. And so I was talking to her about this, and she said, our students have been so empowered by some of the programs that my nonprofit has introduced. They're ready to speak about it. They want to tell the world. And so she asked me if I would come and help these kids with their public speaking and give them some opportunities. And of course, I said, that sounds amazing. And then I included some colleagues that I work within different networks that serve parents and families. And I said, hey, maybe we could do this together and bring several different kinds of experts to solve some of the issues that they're having or address some of the problems and challenges that they have. And so we've got a group of up to 25 people that this July are heading to Tanzania. And we're going to be there during their regular school day in these eight schools. And we're going to kind of split up and do some different programs in the schools. There's going to be, of course, public speaking. There'll be some entrepreneurship training, or vocational training, I should say, because a lot of these kids are not going to get to college. But how can they contribute to their community? We want to help them to see that they do have an aptitude for something. What can that be? And how can we turn that into a vocation for you? We're going to be providing hygiene kits for the girls. So in Africa, many people know it's a big stigma. Once a month, when they're having their menstrual cycle, they don't go to school because they don't have the proper materials to support that, and they kind of got to stay at home. So Aika and her group actually provide these kits that have these reusable, washable sanitary pads that these girls now can wear to school so they can attend and they don't miss 20% of their schooling and usually drop out by the time they're 12 or 13, which is awful because then sometimes they're forced into early marriage,
Right.
or they have to turn to prostitution to support their family because they're not in school. And I mean, just all sorts of problems when these girls are not kept in school. So we're going to be providing, taking some of those supplies with us. And actually, what we'd really love to be able to do is bring some sewing machines with us and some fabric and notions so that Aika and her group can actually make those products instead of buying them at great price from other manufacturers. They can actually make them there and create some jobs within the community at the same time. We're going to take a bunch of sports equipment. We're going to teach these kids how to play soccer, maybe volleyball, things like that, and take everything they need to do that, which they don't have now. And so we're just excited. There's going to be a nurse and a physician that goes with us as well to support what their schools have in the way of medical treatment when necessary to fight infections, whatever is happening, because a lot of these
Right.
kids don't have access to medical facilities readily. They could be miles and miles of walking to reach something like that. So the schools are a good place to start with initial treatment and things like that. So we're just going to provide as much support as we can in as many ways as we can. We're going to be there for a couple of weeks. And this is July 29th through August 9th. And we're also going to be there during the Great Migration season in Kilimanjaro. So we'll probably take a little bit of a safari if we can find some time and maybe even climb Mount Kilimanjaro. So we're looking for people who want to come who have a specific skill set that can support what we're doing and what our mission is and make a huge difference to these up to 4,000 kids
Wow,
in
that's a
10.
lot of kids.
Yeah.
That is absolutely amazing. So, what is the best way for people if they want to either work with you, find out more about your mission, learn about your programs? What is the best way for people to reach you?
There's a couple of ways they can get a hold of me. One, I've got this website hub where they can find me on social media, some videos about what we're doing, and all sorts of things about me. That's JackieBailey360.com. JackieBailey360.com. You can connect with me there. Or you can go directly and email me at director@speakfeedlead.org. So director@speakfeedlead.org is where you can just directly email me, or you can find me at JackieBailey360.com.
Perfect. And I will put all of that in the show notes so that it'll be printed out for them so they can see it. And then,
Thank you.
Jackie, this was so much fun. But before you leave, can you, for the people out there listening in any stages of life with kids, without kids, whatever it is, give them some words of advice or words of wisdom to walk away with?
Silencing and being silenced is often more traumatic than the physical or emotional thing that happens to you originally. So
Amen.
stop being silent and help your kids stop being silent. Have the conversations that are necessary with people that you know who are adults, spouses, other family members, or your kids, and help your kids to do the same thing. We all need to heal from the traumas that we've suffered. Being silent is not the way. So start sharing your story, start talking about it, because as I've learned, you're going to heal a little bit deeper and you're going to inspire other people. So that's my advice.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And for everybody else out there, again, listen to that advice because that is some really, really, really big words of wisdom from Jackie. Just you got to have a voice. You were born with a voice, a beautiful voice. So let it go. Let people hear it. Let people hear your stories. You have a blessed week and we'll see you next time.